as usual, I don't want to punish those who are punctual, so we'll get started. We'll get started here in the chat. I will share, include the source sheet. So the source sheet is in the chat, and I'll also share the screen momentarily. Okay, thank you everyone for coming, those who are continuing with the Wednesday Night Share and those who are joining for the first time. Very excited to have everyone and very excited to explore this topic with you. I think I may have mentioned to some, but sort of how this topic came to mind. There was one night I was up at like 4 in the morning, I'm not sure why, and I was thinking, I guess because I had been thinking, what should we do for our next series? You know, each of our different series, we do something a little bit different. So I was thinking, what could be the next one? And I was like half asleep at 4 in the morning, and I thought of this idea of discussing the way different emotions play into Judaism, what their role is in Jewish life, and what the Torah has to say about them. And what I think prompted me to think this was so much, especially in the last couple of months, of what we've seen in the Jewish world in particular with reactions to the whole COVID situation. Some of it is calculated, but there can't be any doubt that some of what people do, whether it's a rush to go to shul or being particularly cautious, and these could also be for different people different things. And actually, shortly before I thought of this idea, there was an article about a lot of the Breslov or Hasidim, which is also where I thought of Mitzvah Gedol Elios B'Simcha, who wanted to get into the Ukraine to go for Rosh Hashanah. And you could tell there was a lot of passion and a lot of emotion. So with this, I thought that the emotions do play an important part, certainly in our lives, whether they're deliberate or not, but in Judaism as well. On certain occasions, we are actually commanded that seemingly to have certain emotions, and really controlling our emotions, being aware of them, is something that's very important, both in ourselves with building character, as well as just our overall service of God. So in the first class, I'd like this to explore the emotion of simcha, of happiness in Judaism. I'll add the file again to the chat and also share the screen. Everyone can see the screen? Okay, excellent. Also, I put everyone on mute just to begin with, but as those of who are regular participants know that chiming in at any point, arguing anything is absolutely encouraged, so please feel free to do so. So there's a popular song, it's made into a popular song, Mitzvah Gedola Lios B'Simcha Tamid, meaning it's a great mitzvah to be happy all the time. Now, I'm not sure if some people are under the impression that this is a pasuk, a biblical verse, or what the source is, but as far as I'm aware, the source is in Rabbi Nachman of Breslov's Likutei Maharan. He presents this idea that it's a great mitzvah to be happy all the time. And the full statement is in source one, L'izgaber l'harki ka'atzvos v'amare Shekora b'chol kocho, and a person should strengthen oneself to distance himself from any type of sadness and gloom, with all of their strength. So it clearly emphasizes that happiness is very important. But the question is this a true statement? Is it good to be happy all the time? And is it a mitzvah to be happy all the time? Any ideas?
I think it might be a little awkward if you're at a funeral.
So Rhonda says there are some times, just from our lived experiences, where if you were certainly to express you know, joy would be inappropriate. Right, I hear that. I definitely think that that's a question you could have on the statement. Meaning is, you know, some of the, not all, but there are different communities of Breslov Hasidim, followers of Rabbi Nachman, who passed away about 200 years ago, you know, the ones who dance on top of the buses, the na-na-nas. So it would probably be, I don't know if they do at a funeral, but it would, right, as Rana said, it would seem to be quite inappropriate to exhibit joy at certain occasions. But just in general, what's the value of happiness? What might we have to be cautious about when approaching happiness?
Hasn't science confirmed that laughter has very healing effects?
I have heard things like that. And just in general, to be in a good mood, I heard that when people are suffering from physical illnesses, that being in good spirits is something that can really help someone, you know, cope and fight an illness in ways that if they're not in good spirits can be more difficult. So, also before we proceed, how do we define happiness? So I'm using simcha. Simcha sometimes translated as joy or happiness. So whatever translation you want to use, you know, nothing can be exact. But when you say happiness or simcha, what does that mean? You know, first we have to get a working definition. So in the Webster's Dictionary, under the entry of happiness, it listed two definitions, which I think what we'll see about simcha represent two components of simcha, and as reflected in different sources and for different occasions. Let me just close this out. So the dictionary definition of happiness, so one, a state of well-being and contentment, and B, a pleasurable or satisfying experience. Right, and those aren't always the same. There's either just a state of wellness, and seemingly some sort of surge, some sort of boost that's out of the ordinary. So it seems from several sources, and there are more that I didn't put on here, that simcha is considered an integral part of our service of God, and that our service of God should be characterized by simcha. Have the pasuk in Tehillim, Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha, also a song, Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha, serve Hashem with joy, bo lefanav b'irnana, come before Him with praise. And then, if there's no more powerful emphasis on simcha, it's in the following, in the tochacha that we find, the rebuke that we find in Sefer Devarim, in source 4, and when it lists all the terrible punishments that will come to the Jewish people if they don't follow the Torah, it says, "Uvo alecha kol klalos ha'elu urdafucha v'sigucha ad hishmatcha." All these curses, will befall you, pursuing you and overtaking you to destroy you. And then, two verses later, it says, really going on this statement, Tachas asher lo avadat Hashem Elokecha b'simcha v'tuv levav meirov kol. Because you didn't serve Hashem your God with happiness and gladness of heart when you had abundance of everything.
I think I read somewhere that simcha is something that you celebrate with other people. English here seems to be focusing on the individual.
It is. It's saying that true simcha is only something that's shared.
That's shared, yeah. And happiness in English seems to suggest a state of well-being and contentment, pleasurable, or satisfied. That could be for the individual. It sounds like it's centered on the individual.
So the truth is, like, I'm sorry?
Simcha and happiness are the same thing.
So, like any translation, there, you know, there's no translation that's perfect. But as far as the point, whether it's on the individual or on the being misameach, we'll call it, gladdening or bringing joy to the community. I think we will see, I think it's both. I think the point about bringing joy to the community is something we're going to see is essential. But I do think, in the context that Simcha has mentioned, that it also can refer to an individual's happiness. Maybe it's a greater Simcha. I think we'll see that. But I think Simcha does apply and is even valued, even from the individual. So, Ronnie, you were going to say?
Well, I'm just sort of looking at the definition in English, and I would classify happiness as a feeling, right?
Yeah, you could say that. Meaning as opposed to an act.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, so I think we'll see. I think there is both. So.
Yeah, there could be acts that would express that feeling, such as dancing or singing.
Exactly. So that could be, if we go with the holy Webster's dictionary, I think we see with definitions A and B, I think we see both of those elements. The state of well-being and contentment is more the person and the emotions and the pleasurable or satisfying experience, probably more in the realm of expression of joy. So, but just on the point of, yep. Meaning there was a certain comfort. There certainly was an expression of a pleasurable experience, but there's a certain basic happiness that even existed in times of pain. So there's a happiness that doesn't even. So you're saying that, and I think it's a good point, that there can be a happiness is not necessarily dependent on pleasure. So we'll get to that. The question is, why is, if we look at this source number 4 in Dvarim, in the Tochacha, it seems quite extreme that they will say these curses will come about because you didn't serve Hashem with a proper level of joy. So it could be that the curses don't come just based on that, but why is it so important? Why is it considered, it looks like so lacking if someone serves Hashem without Simcha? Or let's say, what is Simcha add to Avodas Hashem? Meaning, is Simcha for us? You know, people like to be happy. Is it a selfish thing, or is it a component of Avodas Hashem? In what ways does it help with Avodas Hashem? So I'm just going to...
It says when you had an abundance of everything. So I think the suggestion is that you're ascribing your success to yourself instead of giving credit to God. Because Moshe Rabbeinu said in the bar that you're going to enter the land, you're going to have abundance.
Right, then you shouldn't say that it was my own power that achieved it. Exactly. Could I just ask that anyone who's not talking mute themselves? Thank you, sir. And please feel free to unmute whenever, but just if you're not speaking. So, and there are a couple ways that we see that Simcha is necessary. Another question is Simcha always good? So if you look at, we just read Koheles, Ecclesiastes on this year on Shmini Atzeres. So it seemingly has two contradictory statements about Simcha. In Source 5, it says, V'shibakti anias ha-Simcha, I praised Simcha. Asher ein tov la'adam tachas ha'shemesh ki im lecho v'lishos v'lismoa. There's nothing better for man under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be merry. V'hu yilvenu ba'malo yimechayav asher nasan lo elokim tachas ha'shemesh. And this will accompany him through the days of his life that God gave him under the sun. So this seems to fit in quite nicely with Rabbi Nachman, that it's a great mitzvah to be happy all the time. Then you have a second statement of Koheles, where he seems to downplay Simcha. Source 6 says, L'skok amarti neholal simcha mazos, that of laughter I said, you know, it's mingled and concerning joy, I said, what does it accomplish? So it seems to be by the same author, one perspective of joy that's very positive, and another perspective of joy that's negative. And we also said that there's seemingly certain occasions that joy is inappropriate. It's like in Mishin Nichnas Av, in Source 7, when the month of Av comes, we decrease our joy. So it seems like we have certainly an emphasis on Simcha, you know, no greater emphasis than in Source 4 in Dvarim, but there's also indications within biblical and rabbinic literature that there are times where joy is inappropriate. So what's the difference? What type of joy is considered positive and what type of joy is Koheles saying that basically doesn't accomplish anything? So the Gemara says in Source 8, the Gemara tries to reconcile these two verses from Koheles, that joy is good and that it's worthless. It says, Vishibakti Anisa Simcha, I praised Simcha. That refers to Simcha Shel Mitzvah, the joy of a mitzvah. The Simcha Ma'zo Sa, and of joy, what does it accomplish? Zo Simcha She'ena Shel Mitzvah. That's Simcha that's not related to a mitzvah. And it says, we learn from this, Lametcha Ein Shechina Shoresh Lo Mitoch Atzvos, that the Shechina, the divine presence, does not dwell upon someone in the midst of sadness, v'lomitoch atzlos, or laziness, v'lomitoch skok, and not with laughter, with levity, v'lomitoch halas rosh, v'lomitoch sicha, and not through idle conversation, v'lomitoch dvarim b'telem, and not through idle chatter, idle words, elomitoch dvar simcha shel mitzvah. Rather, when does, one, what's appropriate simcha? It's a simcha of a mitzvah. And when does the Shechina rest upon someone? I mean, when does a person have the level of connection to God and the protection of God? When they're involved, or they're feeling the Simcha Shel Mitzvah. And it also says, even when someone is stating a matter of halacha, or you know, saying words of Torah, they should do so in the in the spirit of Simcha. So it seems to be essential, particularly when serving God, in the service of God, it sounds like Simcha is something that's essential, that if someone doesn't have that level of Simcha, so they're compromising on their relationship with God, right, and on their service of Him. So why? Why is Simcha so important? You know, is it just we want to feel good? I mean, obviously for ourselves, we want to, we don't want to feel pain. But objectively, when it comes to our service of Hashem, why is Simcha so important? So I think there are a couple of perspectives to this. One is that when you're happy, when you're doing a mitzvah, so it shows you appreciate the value of the mitzvah. And in Source 9, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Refuah Shlema, in his Orchas Yosher, so he said the Sefer Charedim explains the concept of joy of the mitzvah as follows. He says each mitzvah one has the opportunity to do should be perceived as a gift sent from Hashem, and therefore the degree of happiness that one exhibits shows how much he appreciates and values the gift, and that is beloved in his eyes as a present of Hashem. Right? If he exults in the opportunity, then this will cause him to love mitzvos and pursue them, and accordingly, his reward will be doubled. So it's not just that it's a good and healthy state of mind to be happy, is that simcha in itself seems like a expression of love of Hashem and appreciation of his mitzvos. And the person will be rewarded if they do a mitzvah b'simcha. Might think it's better if I do a mitzvah when, you know, I'm not happy, I'm doing it begrudgingly, but I'm doing it anyway. He says, no, optimally a person should do a mitzvah and have a sense of simcha, because the sense of happiness that he has when he does a mitzvah shows that he appreciates it. And then the Gemara in Shabbos, the next door, says there's another layer to simcha shel mitzvah, that if we're happy when we do mitzvos, so we'll be more likely to observe them. You know, that's generally human nature, but it's really a safeguard against abandoning mitzvos, which often happen from being frustrated or not being in a state of mind where we appreciate it. And the Gemara is a powerful statement that the mitzvos that survived and that we merit to keep are things that we did happily. One, we did it happily, and two, the spirit of happiness with which we did the mitzvos initially carries on to our experience with the mitzvos now. The Gemara says in Source 10, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel said, "Kol mitzvah shekiblu aleihem besimcha." All mitzvahs that the Jewish people accepted upon themselves with simcha, kigon milah, like bris milah. Dixiv says, "Sasa nochi al imrasecha kimotze shlal rav." They rejoice at your word as one who finds great spoil, which refers to the bris milah. Adayin osa osa besimcha. That he still performed that mitzvah with simcha, right? We don't say, I have to. Well, actually, I don't know what the baby does, but generally, a bris is a festive occasion. We, you know, for ourselves, we have when we join with others. It's not something that we do begrudgingly, you know, especially if there's a good breakfast. But it's something that we've also have kept meticulously throughout the generations. That even when, you know, we've assimilated in some other ways, and even nowadays, we're still overall very careful about bris milah. And the Gemara indicates, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says, that really the lasting power of this mitzvah is a result of the fact that we were joyful initially when we got it, and we remain joyful when performing this mitzvah. And it says, right for this next part, b'kol mitzvah, Shekiblu aleihem biktata, that all mitzvahs that they accepted upon themselves with contentiousness, kigon arayus, like, you know, some forbidden relationships, v'ksiv v'yish Moshe asa am bochel l'mishpachosav, and Moshe heard the weeping family by family, al iske mishpachosav adayin ose biktata. So with families, with, you know, shalom bayis, there's still, you know, to some extent or another, a level of contentiousness that's inevitable. Hopefully, on a whole, it's not like that. But, okay, initially, maybe we weren't so happy to be, we felt limited in, you know, in the relationships we were allowed to have. We were a little bit, we accepted the law begrudgingly. Therefore, it becomes inevitable that, you know, any marriage will have a certain degree of contentiousness. Again, hopefully not much. But it shows that initially the level of simcha with which we accepted the mitzvos really impacted the future generations' experience and performance of those mitzvos. So it goes like what the Chaim Kanievsky quoted, that that could be a consequence or reward or punishment, for that matter, of our appreciation for the mitzvos. We accepted it with joy, so it shows that we appreciate it. Therefore, we were able to carry it out in a more joyous way afterwards. So we see the great value of simcha, both to show appreciation of a mitzvah and as a way that we to keep mitzvos, to continue to want to do them. But as we pointed out in the beginning, are there some times where simcha may either be inappropriate, or there may be a benefit to not being so happy all the time? Right, if I would ask the question again, think it's beneficial to be happy all the time? Even not with regard to, you know, tragedy, God forbid.
Let's say most of the time.
Most of the time. Okay, so I had to put this because in fairness to Rabbi Nachman, so there are some people, I would say more cynical people, and I can sometimes, you know, admittedly, you know, have such an approach that will challenge the statement of Rabbi Nachman. Is it really a mitzvah to be happy all the time? So one, I don't think you could argue he's not saying it's actually one of the 613 mitzvahs. But even Rabbi Nachman acknowledges that there are times when it's appropriate to be more somber. And he says very much like Rana said, in Source 11, he says, "Afgam leib nishbar hu tov ma'od." Even though a broken heart is very good, right? So Rabbi Nachman is not totally about, you know, singing and dancing all the time. He acknowledged there are times where being broken, and if done in a healthy way, it can perhaps be an impetus to do tshuva. So certainly there are times where that can be very positive. In kozeh hu rak be'ezo shah. But that's only at particular times. V'roi likbo alo eze shah be'yom l'shaber libo l'farish tikash l'fanav yisbarach. And even said that there are times during the day that a person should set aside to express this feeling of a broken heart, express the feeling that, you know, that we could do better. There are things, let's say, that one regrets or wants to improve upon. He says that's good. Because I think he's responding to the implication that if you're happy all the time, so then maybe you're never reflecting on your actions, you're never looking to improve. Right? Sometimes a catalyst for improvement is that there are things that we're disappointed about, or that we recognize are lacking. So he says certainly the person should set aside a time during the day to reflect on, to have this type of broken heart. You move that later. Aval kolayam kulo tzarek lios besimcha. But the entire day, at least the entire rest of the day, maybe even during that time, but certainly the rest of the day, a person needs to be happy.
Can you believe Nish? If you focus on the definition as contentment being a significant part of the understanding of the word simcha, then it's directing you to be content, not with your life, but with life.
With
alternative is not good, so you should always be content. Life.
I like that. Is it content with life, but not your life per se? Meaning, life is good. In my life, I need something to improve.
Right. So, as I said, the alternative is not good. So you should be very happy that you have the opportunity to have life.
Right. Exactly. So there's this overall happiness that you should have, even at times when someone has that leiv nishbar, that broken heart. And
if we're able to attend the funeral.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's true. Baruch Hashem, you're alive. That they even say a bracha, you know, upon... Say we bless Hashem, we say a bracha for the good and for the bad. And even if one gets an inheritance when their, you know, parent, God forbid, passes away, so there's even a bracha for that. So right, they're all, even as bad as the situation is, the fact that we're here is something to be grateful for. Maybe that could be why Rabbi Nachman says, he still says, but still, the whole day needs to be done with simcha. That can mean maybe even if the times that someone designates to have this broken heart. And he says, why? Why is it that overall, the overwhelming majority of the day, one should be v'simcha? He says, That a broken heart can bring you, to depression, and I want to be cautious with using the words because there's clinical depression is something, is something else, and I don't want to conflate, that. But these experiences of extreme sadness, so he says that, let's say, a person really should have, a certain amount of simcha and a certain amount of, let's say, this broken heart type of experience. And it's possible that they'll overindulge or overemphasize one over the other. So Rabbi Nachman is saying, much better if you want to err on the side of caution, err on the side of too much simcha rather than too much of this broken heart state of mind. Because what's going to happen? And he points out, and this is a theme that he mentions, it mentions elsewhere, that it can be very counterproductive for someone to, even if they've done something wrong, to feel too bad about themselves or too down. Because sometimes what happens is then they just give up. And the
Rabbi,
yep.
Rabbi, how do you explain what our feeling, although it's nowadays it's not like that, but many, many years ago apparently it was. How we're supposed to feel on Tisha B'Av, the loss of our
Okay, so we'll get to Tisha B'Av, but right, it sounds like Tisha B'Av is very sad, even which you just saw. When Av comes, and even the month leading up to Tisha B'Av comes, we're supposed to be sad. And we'll see that on Tisha B'Av itself, there are expressions of mourning that we do. Right, so that's going to be the question. Clearly, there are some times that, even periods of time, where we're not supposed to have simcha. So that how do we we'll see how we can reconcile that, perhaps. But he said, if you could err on the side of one, err on the side of too much simcha. And
I'd just like to say one thing also about the mourning thing in Tisha B'Av. It's very interesting that during a period of aninut, between when your loved one dies and you bury your loved one, that we're given exemption from doing positive mitzvahs. It's like, you can't do those mitzvahs with simcha.
Okay, we'll get there. We'll go there. Nathan and Warren, you could both give the rest of the share. I love it because you're touching upon what we're going to see. But exactly. Exactly. So there's great Torah scholar in New York, Rav Avram Shor, and I heard him say, and he speaks very powerfully. He said, the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, doesn't care about your sinning. It cares about that once you do the sin, then you give up. You're miyayish. You totally despair of improving. So that's why I think Rabbi Nachman is emphasizing so much that have the simcha because it's a way to keep you on the proper path. So why do we have that balance between the simcha that's proper and simcha that's not proper? Because we even saw in Koheles that even when we say we have to be mesameach all the time, so what kind of simcha is proper? So the Orchos Tzadikim says that he discusses the second part, and now we're going to shift a little bit to definition B. Definition, a pleasurable or satisfying experience. Meaning, when is that appropriate? Because that could be, as we said, that could be a little bit more sensitive than maybe an overall feeling of wellment and contentment. So the Orchos Tzadikim says in extolling the benefits of joy, it's like a merry heart. It quotes from Proverbs: a merry heart is like good medicine. But he says in verse 12, from joy will come laughter. But it's not fitting for an intelligent man to laugh too much, for with too much laughter goes a frivolous mind. And it's said, there's the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. So it's already been said that one of the signs of a fool is that he laughs when and where it is not proper. So I think that's how when we mention the fact that there are certain occasions and certain times of the year where it would be inappropriate, or simcha ostensibly is inappropriate, It sounds like this is referring to that second definition, the expressions of joy, experiences of joy. And he says that's something, even when saying how beneficial joy is, a person still has to be mindful when it's appropriate to laugh, you know, to express joy, and when it's not. So if yeah?
A young person, let's say age bar mitzvah, maybe 2 years older, when he fasts all of Yom Kippur, okay, when he finishes the fast, there must be some contentment and some happiness to that.
Well, Yom Kippur, yeah, Yom Kippur is a very happy day.
Especially when we all fast properly.
Right. Well, Yom Kippur is a happy day, but you mean, did you mean Tisha B'Av? That even just the...
No, I was thinking about Yom Kippur.
Right, there's a feeling of... Right, and it's not this word where we express joy in the same way that we would on Yom Tov, for example. But there is, there's a feeling... Right. Aha, right. Yom Kippur. So when it comes to expressions of joy, so what type of expressions of joy are appropriate? And we'll even get to when there's a simcha, meaning there's a happy occasion. So fact is, many times, even within our tradition, but even socially, there's some celebration with wine or alcohol. I would say that's also a something that should be approached with caution and not overdone. But it's something that I think socially is done. And even on certain times of the year, there is a mitzvah to enjoy oneself through eating and drinking. And how do we balance that? What's the place of, let's say, alcohol, or call it partying, real expressions of joy? What place does that have in this whole context of joy of serving God? So what do you think? What, I guess, particularly with food and drink, what does that do? Is that holy? Does that accomplish anything with Avodat Hashem? The good, bad.
You say a bracha.
You say a bracha on because you're enjoying it.
Sparingly, especially and
on special occasions, right? There are times where it's certainly being inappropriate. And as far as our service of God, does it?
But by enjoying the food and the drink, you're expressing to God that you appreciate that He's given it to us.
Very good. You're enjoying what God made in the world. You know, God made a world, and there are certain things we're allowed to enjoy. So you're showing that that you appreciate it. So the Rambam says in Hilchos Yom Tov, says on how do you rejoice on Yom Tov? Right, we just had Yom Tov. How do you rejoice? In Source 13, he says, "Aktanim nosem lahem klayos vagozim umigdanos." That for children you give roasted seeds, nuts, and sweets. I don't know about the roasted seeds. Those for my kids, but you give them things that they enjoy. And for women, you buy jewelry and clothing, right? Tend to like that. Right? He does mention at least some general. Like observations about gender distinctions. I don't know if they always hold true, but he said for the women they like clothing and jewelry, and for the men, often buster v'shosen yayin, eat meat and drink wine. She ain't simcha ella b'baster, ain't simcha ella b'yayin, because there's no simcha without meat and wine. And the model for this, it used to be that they would eat actually the korbanot that they would bring, but he says that that's a way to enjoy Yom Tov, the expression of Yom Tov. which is in the service of God, doing a mitzvah, but that's enhanced by enjoying oneself. And in Source 14, the Orchos Tzaddikim explains how wine in a healthy way can work. And I think he lays out as a healthy prescription for drinking wine. I'll read the English. He says, from all these citations, we can know the praise of wine when it is drunk according to the measure of the wise who drink a specified amount, so that the intelligence may be stronger than the wine, and not the wine be stronger than the intelligence. Right? That's a key point. You don't drink where the wine is controlling you. You drink so that you're still in control. And you drink at a set time together and not with those barren of knowledge, right? You drink with people who be a good influence, vain and empty. So what benefit does wine have? For wine adds deep wisdom, a tree of life for those that hold it. And wine adds wisdom to the intelligent person, but doubles the folly of the fool. Right? You have to be careful. For one who's looking to grow, is looking to connect and enjoy in a proper way, wine can be beneficial. But someone who's doing it for just self-indulgence, then that will be the downfall. You know, so as we see this in Purim, the people who are, the great people who you can tell are really emotionally affected by Purim, don't act like boors when they drink. But if you just do people just overdrink, so that's in Purim, maybe a different story. But the general approach to drinking alcohol and celebrating in that way is that the person is in control, so you don't drink excessively, you don't drink all the time, but in responsible measure and at certain times, as it can add wisdom, as it revives the love of a friend, but stirs up the enmity of a foe, right? Very true, right? Sometimes you have a little bit to drink, so you have a greater feelings of affection. Maybe you're even more willing to express the affection to those whom you love, but you don't like someone, so maybe that's going to come out. You say, Nichnas Yayin Yatzah So, the wine goes in, the secrets come out. So if the secrets are good, then the wine will be beneficial. So because it opens the hand of the generous and hardens the heart of a miser. So you have to be very careful with it. But we see that wine can, and celebration can maybe clear the head. It can bring out feelings of love and affection towards others and towards Hashem. So in When engaged in responsibly, so celebrating through wine and let's say other alcohol and food can be something that, and making ourselves happy in that way can be something that may enhance our affection towards each other and Hashem and can be beneficial. But of course, it's not appropriate all the time. And because why is that? Also, when man is plunged in pain or grief, he has not the strength to fulfill the request of someone who is speaking to him or is asking him for a favor. So it says it's an Eitz Ratzon that when someone is celebrating so they can be more favorable towards people and they can connect with Hashem in certain ways that may be enhanced. And we saw, the Talmud said that a person should be careful that the type of simcha that Koheles and Shlomo HaMelech said that is worthless is simcha that comes from schok and kalas rosh, from levity, from silliness. So is there ever a case, is there ever a place for silliness? So Rabbi Nachman actually says that in this endeavor to make oneself happy, and he says that this is something that one should do. It's important for continuing their service of Hashem. He says in Source 15, therefore, a person has to exercise great effort in forcing himself to be happy at all times and to bring himself to joy in any way he can, even with silliness. So obviously, a joke or behavior should be appropriate, not be vulgar, not be in any ways in violation of the Torah. But sometimes, if you need a joke or a little bit of silliness or something to pick yourselves up, so Rabbi Nachman says that could be appropriate. That these expressions of joy we saw through you know, through celebrating, through drink, food and drink, and even through some element of humor and comedy, that can be something that can be beneficial. However, and this goes back to Professor Sakin's point, is real simcha when it achieved, when it's shared with others. So in the continuation of the Rambam, who says that there's no simcha unless there's meat and wine, but he says, Teshu'u in source 16, so he uses the joy of real value must include bringing joy to others. He says, that when a person eats and drinks in celebration of the holiday, he's required to feed the converts, orphans, and widows, Mishar Niyam Amlolim, and all of the those who are impoverished. Aval Nisha Noel Delosos Delsos Chatzer Ba'ochel Veshose Hu Vana V'Ishto. So someone who, you know, now it's a little bit harder to have guests, but in a regular, you know, we have to find other ways that we can bring joy to others. But someone says, I'm going to enjoy the holiday, it's me and my family, and I'm not going to invite anyone else. Eino Machil Umashke and Laniim. And he doesn't ensure that those who are lacking, who are vulnerable, are enjoying themselves. Einze simchas mitzvah, elos simchas kreso. That's not the rejoicing of a mitzvah, even though you say, oh, it's for yontiv, right? I'm in my sukkah, I'm having my, you know, my barbecue. But if you're not sharing it with anyone else, he says that's not the simcha of a mitzvah. The simcha of a mitzvah is maximized and is really fully achieved by bringing simcha to others. So I think that's the point. Certainly one simcha should not be at the expense or without concern for others. So we said that there's such a importance of simcha. So what about times of the year where you're not allowed to have simcha? Meaning you're not allowed to... You're explicitly not supposed to engage in things that bring you joy. For example, in the month of Av, and certainly on the day of Tisha B'Av, source 17 says, "Mikshenisatz Av Mimatin B'Simcha." So, Shavuot Shachol, that when the month of Av enters, you diminish your simcha. That the week that Tisha B'Av falls, also Masavu L'Kabes, it's forbidden to cut one's hair, to launder clothes. And on Erev Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to eat two cooked dishes or eat meat or drink wine. So it's like the opposite of Yontif. Right? In Yontif, you eat meat and drink wine and you celebrate and you wear nice clothing. On Tisha B'Av, you have the opposite. And what are... But if you look at the list of, as was mentioned, if you look at the list of things that we're supposed to refrain from because they give us simcha, so it gives us a perspective of what type of simcha is really important, is really valuable. So in source 18, the Gemara in Tainus says that all mitzvot that are practiced by a mourner are likewise practiced on Tisha B'Av. So if it's written to eat, drink, anoint oneself, wearing shoes, having marital relations, but also... it's also forbidden to read from any parts of Tanakh, Mishnah, Talmud, or Medrash, Halachos V'Agados, and you can't learn anything. You can't learn Mishnah, Gemara, Medrash. There are limited parts of Torah that are related to mourning or to the destruction which you're allowed to learn. But most Torah, you're not allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av. Why? Shenemar, Pikudei Hashem Risharim V'Samchei Lev. That the precepts of Hashem are right, rejoicing the heart. Right? Torah is Nesam Chedlev, that it brings gladness to the heart. This maybe assumes that we have the proper perspective of what brings true simcha. And that there are days where we're supposed to, at least the expressions of simcha, are supposed to be diminished. And this is something that in our own religious life, especially nowadays, when I think there really is more of an emphasis on positivity and you know, encouragement as opposed to, you know, fire and brimstone rebuke or even, you know, expressions of sadness. So what do we do during times of the year or at occasions where it's, where at least halakhically it's considered inappropriate? So there was an article a couple of years ago by Professor Chaim Saiman about the that's made its rounds on the, you know, the internet and social media about the Tisha B'Av Kumzitz. So he's saying, so now, you know, the Tisha B'Av that many of us way that many of us observe Tisha B'Av is probably different than the way that many of our ancestors observe Tisha B'Av, especially if you, especially in Eretz Yisrael. You know, there are, you know, videos at the Kotel and Tisha B'Av, people singing together, not with music, but people singing together. It seems like a, there are elements of that that are, can be very uplifting. There are those, we have, you know, inspirational speakers, maybe they're speaking about the Chorban, about the destruction. But there's, in many ways, Tisha B'Av now has become a day of encouragement. And there's this article discussed whether, you know, that's completely proper. And it wasn't a halakhic article, but it's just noted how the experience of Tisha B'Av has changed. And he says that, in source 19, he said, can you imagine Jews in 11th century Worms or 19th century Vilna sharing images of their Tisha B'Av as a triumph of Jewish peoplehood? Meaning, a lot of what we're expressing now in Tisha B'Av is, you know, is unity, you know, arm in arm, you know, at the Kotel. But that's probably not the way that, you know, historically Jews observed Tisha B'Av. So he says that basically that there are some difficulties or things that have to be reconciled with halakha, and I think these types of observances are, you know, taken into account. There's not, you know, live music, and there are the themes of Tisha B'Av, but he says it comes out of a desire to, you know, to make Tisha B'Av relevant and meaningful, and oftentimes the people who are, you know, involved in these types of things, which may be less quote unquote traditional, are the people who, you know, are most passionate about, you know, what Tisha B'Av means and represents. So it just shows that nowadays there's a, especially when you know, many educators say that positivity is really most productive, you know, as opposed to, you know, harsh rebuke. Obviously there is a time for some rebuke, but an educator say you can't say what, you know, probably when I know everyone here is young, but, you know, several decades ago, you know, rabbis or teachers, you know, may have spoken in a way that that was harsh, but maybe was encouraging, or sparked in a certain change. Whereas nowadays, you know, kids wouldn't respond to it. So it shows a delicate balance that we want to encourage people. That overall feeling of simcha is important, but we have to balance it with the fact that there are times of the year that it's inappropriate to at least have those expressions of simcha. So now we get to, you know, the basic question. We get to with definitions A and B of happiness being a state of well-being and contentment, and the pleasurable or satisfying experience. We've seen examples of both, that living a life of mitzvos, the contentment, as well as even the experiencing, the joyful experiences of celebrating and even of laughing, you know, also have their place. But if we go back to the question, is it a true statement that it's a mitzvah to be happy all the time? Despite the fact that there are some times where seemingly simcha expressions of it are prescribed. So the Orcha Sadikim, I think, helps us reconcile this tension. What do we do with times that we're not supposed to be happy? So he says that what brings happiness? At the end of the day, what brings happiness? And it was mentioned when we, for example, at a funeral, the fact that we're here and the fact that Hashem is in charge. And the Orchos Tzaddikim says in source 20, what is the fence of faith? What thing brings a man to complete faith? Is that he should not sway or tremble before a bad happening, but receive all that happens to him with joy. This is like the case of a servant who knows his master well, knows that his master is generous, merciful, and pays a large reward to those who do his will and carry out his bidding. And though he sometimes assigns hard work to his servants, he rewards them with great rewards and makes them great and important. They become the men with whom he counsels, right? Sometimes if there's extra difficulty, it means that Hashem trusts us and wants to give us an opportunity to become close to him. And they become the important people. They eat his table, he caused them to ride in the carriage, second only to his own, and sends them up as administrators over his land. There is no doubt that a servant who knows this about his master, that his master is only looking out for him and wants to help him, will leave any other interest he has in the world and do the will of the master with joy, even though the work is very difficult for him. Even though there are times of life where in life that are difficult, there's no doubt about that. But when he has in mind the good which will be his because of his work, when he knows that everything in life is in Hashem's, is controlled by Hashem, Hashem is always there, and all of our struggles and setbacks are opportunities for growth. So true, there are times where we're not naturally happy, and true, there are even times where it may be inappropriate to express joy in certain ways. But as for the question, is it a mitzvah, or at least is it imperative to be happy all the time, I think it can be said that this basic happiness, with whatever happens, we know that Hashem is there, that life has a purpose, that's something that can hopefully lift us up and stay with us, even during times that are challenging.